Ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? If it is henceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. The thought that I am trying to bring to you tonight may seem, at first thought, a little bit optimistic. I intend for it to be. I am not asking you all to agree with me, because that would be expecting a great deal, but I am asking you all to hear me through until I have completed my thought. I am not pessimistic about the work of the Church of God. I believe that there is a great future before us. I am not one to believe that the day of opportunity is past. I believe that the day of opportunity is before us. And when I say this, I hope to be able to back them up tonight with the reasons why. How many of you individuals here tonight, may I ask, would like to double the membership of your church? All right. Now I'm going to tell you how you can do it. I don't believe that there's any reason for us to assume in this day and age that we have to go along with the same old faithful half dozen that have come out to services time after time. I want you to think first of all of the benefits that would occur if we would come to some definite understanding of a practical method to accomplish this purpose. You have heard it said here time and again that the ministry is underpaid. Many are having difficulty getting along. You probably didn't believe it until you saw this mouth organ that Roy uses. You think times are tough. Look at the size of it. If we could double the benefit of the membership of our church, I believe that we would find that there would be an era of prosperity before us. I am not an individual who believes that there's only a few saints here and there that we're going to come to God in spite of any of the effort that we put forth. I believe that there are individuals to be won to Christ, and that is our job. First of all, may I suggest this to you? Wouldn't it be strange, if that were true, wouldn't it be strange that we have 600 or 700 good saints here in the state of Illinois and not a one in North Dakota? Or any of the other states where we have no such work? It is not practical to me. I believe that individuals must be one to Christ. And I believe they can be one to Christ. There is no reason for us to say that they cannot. If we were to double our membership, and if we were to increase those who are interested in the work of Christ, immediately there would be a great advantage to everyone. These churches that are struggling along, having a very difficult time to get by, would find the tension ease. Our pastors would have living wages. Our national work would be out in the open, so it could accomplish the work that it's destined to do. And there would be a general upsurge throughout all of our effort. Now, I am not trying to say that we ought not to go out and to start new churches. But I have seriously wondered for a long time if it may not be possible that we have taken a little of the wrong approach. I am not convinced that it's right to go out and say, let's start a new group here and a new group there and a new group somewhere else, when we can win the same number of people to the churches which already exist and strengthen our fellowship as a whole. In other words, we have said that we should judge our work by the number of new groups that we form. That we go out here and we'll get another 15 people together and we'll start another church, and we'll get over here and we'll get another 15 people together and we'll start another church. Let's stop and think for a moment. We were talking this afternoon of the overhead that we have. When we do that, we simply add another overhead. More churches, small groups, struggling to get along who cannot pay pastors. Now, certainly I do not believe in neglecting that element of evangelism whatsoever. All I'm trying to say to you tonight is this, that if you're going to win people to Christ, you just as well win them to the churches we now have and strengthen our work as a whole until we benefit these things that are confronting us at the present time. So I want to say that to you so that you will understand why I am putting this particular emphasis. When I speak of doubling the membership of the church, I am talking about adding it to the existing churches which we now have, or reaching out for a new church when the old one is entirely unproductive. Now, I know that all of the answers that's going to be brought up as to why we can't do this, I've heard them over and over again. First of all, there's going to be someone who'll come along and say, yes, but there isn't anybody interested in church today. Of course there isn't anybody interested in church today. There isn't anybody interested in buying a Plymouth today. The job of business is going out and interesting them. There isn't anybody interested in buying a Ford today. The job of business is to go out and interest them. Just because there's nobody interested in church today is no reason to suppose that there is no potential possibility. That argument to me means absolutely nothing. Our job is to interest them in church. And it can be done. There isn't any doubt about it. Secondly, there'll be those who'll come along and say, but Brother Watkins, you know that our doctrine is unpopular. Nobody likes our doctrine anymore. And I'll tell you again that that is not true. Our doctrine is not unpopular. I'll give you an example. I have preached funeral sermons for people of every race, creed, and color. And I have dwelt upon the subject of the resurrection before groups that were entirely alien to ours. And I have yet to find the first group that did not appreciate my sermon. That's not bragging on me. I'm telling you just exactly what you'll experience. You ministers know the same thing. Our doctrine is not unpopular. There was a time when we were looked down upon because we believed in the second coming of Christ. That time is past. Today, the world appreciates the second coming of Christ. It's one of the most popular themes. It's no use for us to hide behind that any longer because it's gone. Then there's someone who comes along and says that there's not enough workers. You've heard that one. If I believed in the personal devil, I don't know whether to or not. Now don't try to convert me, somebody. I don't want to get into this. But if I believed in it, I would think that the old gentleman is right on my shoulder whispering and saying, you can't do it, there's not enough. Let me tell you, I don't think we've got, that it's a question of too few members within our church. We've got too many. We've got too many people who say to themselves, we can't do it. We can't do this and we can't do that. And if I wanted to use a biblical illustration, let's go back to the days of Gideon. Gideon had 22,000. They were going to go over and take the Holy Land. And they went over and looked it over, and God looked over these 22,000 and he says, no, no, you've got too many. Too many people there. This one will get to saying he can't. And that one will get to saying he can't. So what did he do? He cut them down to 10,000. He looked them over again. He said, no, that's still too much. You can't do it. Get 300. So he set out in one of the most peculiar ways possible, and he cut the whole thing down to 300. Now, he said, we're ready to do business. When he got it down to 300, he were ready to go to work. So don't let anybody tell me that we don't have enough people to do something. We don't need volumes. What we need is four or five good spark plugs in every church, and that's all. We don't want any more than that. The rest of them will come along and say, you can't do it. And first thing you know, we're bogged down. Someone says to me, well, all right, Brother Watkins, you're so smart. How do you think you're going to double the membership? And I say, it's very simple. Very simple. All you've got to do is to go back to the Bible. I've heard people say time and time and again, well, we're people that believe in the Bible. Yes, sirree, 100%. We don't believe in the Bible at all. Because we've lost the major lessons that's to be found in the Bible. We have forgotten those simple, straightforward truths which were given there. And one of them is the verse that I read for your hearing tonight. He says, neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick. And it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Men don't light a candle, he says, and put it under a bushel. I'm going to tell you this, that I believe that the Church of God has the doctrine. I believe that the Church of God has something to offer to the people. If I didn't believe so, I wouldn't be in this church in the first place. And I believe that the Church of God needs to make no apologies whatsoever for its doctrines. It has something to offer the people. The only trouble is we put a bushel over it. We're afraid somebody will find it out. And I mean that in all sincerity. Oftentimes you try to put on a campaign of some kind in which you want to acquaint a community with the fact that you're a Christian. And somebody will say, well, you can't do that. I don't want them to know. One time I put on a campaign in the community and I wanted to put a little sticker on a car that said, I'm going to church, over to the Church of God. Are you going along? And you know what the members said? Why, we can't do that. That's bragging. We just put a nice little bushel basket over everything that we had to offer. I think that the Bible told us very clearly what he was talking about when he was talking about this bushel, because he goes on to say, let your light so shine before men. Now notice, you quoted scripture for Brother Shaw last night. Quote one for me. What's the rest of it? That they... The basis of missionary work is work. I don't care where it is, whether it's in a foreign mission field or whether it's in the United States. Now just stop and think for a moment. If you were to go into a foreign country and start a missionary work, what would you do? You've got to have a medical clinic. You've got to have some type of a philanthropic work by which you can win the hearts and minds of those people to where they'll listen to your gospel message. In other words, they've got to see the good works of Christianity before they come to believe it. The essence of missionary work, wherever it is performed, is in basic good works by which you show Christ to the individual. And yet we constantly go out and think we're going to beat people in off of the streets into our churches. They have to be won to Christ by the good works that we have. And if I had time tonight, if I would dare take an extra hour, I'd like to go through this whole subject with you from one end to the other. But I'm not going to get off of my notes tonight. But I wish I could. I guess I'm just one of those fellows that don't have nerve enough, but I wish I could. Somehow or another, we have got so afraid of the way that someone else does something or the way that the world does something that we refuse to profit by the knowledge and understanding that should be ours. I don't believe that there is a thing in this world wrong with using the knowledge of the world to further the work of the Lord. The essence of divine wisdom is the application of knowledge throughout the Bible, from the days of Solomon on down. And there are certain basic truths that the world has established that will develop and perpetuate a work such as ours and guarantee its success. All we need is the basis of application. There are sound principles of business that we can bring to apply to our church work that will give us the primary motivating force by which we can go out and win people to Christ. Now, basically, there are six things that I would like to notice. There are perhaps others. There are certain intangibles that enter in. But I am thinking primarily of these six things. If business is going to guarantee the success of a business, it gives consideration to these factors. First of all, survey your field, they tell you. In other words, they don't start a business where a business will wither out and cease to operate in a little while. They know their field before they start. Secondly, they consider their competition. Thirdly, they improve their product constantly. Fourth, they perfect a system of advertising. Fifth, they constantly test and check the results that they are attaining so that they can improve their methods. And finally, they reach out to reap the harvest. And if we will take those same basic things in detail and consider them as far as they concern our own work, we'll find that we can succeed. There is no reason why we cannot. Let us take, first of all, this first question that I mentioned. Survey your field. Look over the opportunities you have. Check the statistics. There's nothing wrong with good old statistics. It's surprising what you can learn by them. There's statistics in the world that will tell you everything about everybody. You can find statistics to tell you exactly how many people brushed their teeth yesterday morning. You can find other statistics to tell you how many people don't have any teeth to brush. The statistics are there for your use, and business applies them always. Now let me give you just a little bit of statistics. There are 52% of the people today who profess Christianity. And the Church of God is going around nibbling at the 5% or more of that 52 that's dissatisfied with their own faith. In other words, we are devoting ourselves to proselyting off of those who are dissatisfied with some other group, almost invariably. We go out and we center absolutely all of our attention upon changing somebody's viewpoint. We're going to get him away from so-and-so is the last thing we do. And while we do that, we neglect entirely that 48% of virgin territory out here that we've never tried to reach. And in that virgin territory, there's all kinds of people. There's the drunk that goes down to the tavern. There's the man that's going out on every type of sin and everything else. But what have we done for him? Nothing. But yet out there is the greatest virgin territory that we have ever tried to touch. 48% of the people in Oregon, by general statistics, are absolute sinners. They don't profess any Christianity of any kind. Now, when I'm talking of statistics, they're general. Let me tell you. When I'm talking of statistics, I'm not saying you can take those statistics and apply them to this town and that town one after another, but I'm talking about the general average, and as far as the Church of God is concerned, those people are out there. And their subjects to be won to Christ. They don't have any preconceived opinions at all. But what have we done to reach them? There are certain things for us to remember today. Look over your field. The people says there is no interest in religion today. If anybody uses that statement, he hasn't done any reading lately. If you'll read the American magazine of this last month, you'll find it using phrases like this. In a practical sense, that certain individuals are capitalizing upon the tremendous revival in religion that's going on in the United States today. There is an upsurge in religious interest. We don't want to recognize it because we've always talked about the falling away so much we're afraid we're going to get in conflict with ourselves. But let me tell you that there is a growing interest in religion today. That there is an opportunity out there for anybody who will reach out and lay hold upon it. There is no question whatsoever about it. Religion is making the greatest comeback at the present time that it's ever made. I don't know how you're going to interpret it in terms of the Bible. I'm not trying to do that tonight. I'm just trying to tell you it's there. It's recognized by every group. It's recognized by every religious writer and thinker in the United States today. And there are individuals who are capitalizing upon it. And while I'm speaking of that particular subject, I wish you'd get an American magazine. Because I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, well, Brother Watkins, the reason that these big evangelists are getting these fellows out is because they're using sensationalism and they're using this and they're using that. I want you to read the article, Religion Super Salesman, in the American magazine of this last month. It's a story of Chuck Templeton, who is the evangelist for the World Council of Churches. And Templeton does not use sensationalism or religious fantastics or anything else in any of his work. He simply gets up and he straightforwardly tries to give the people those good, sound, simple principles. And he's converting 150 people a night on an average. Now, sure, I know someone's going to come along and say, conversion, ooh, what's that? We don't believe in conversion. But let me tell you something. Whenever any man can get 150 people to get up back at that room and to walk down this aisle, he has moved them. I don't care what his doctrine was or what he was preaching. And if those people will respond to him, they'll respond to us. If we give them a gospel message that has meaning and worth in it, there is no doubt about it whatsoever. We have something that a lot of people don't have. We have something that we can offer to the people that we needn't be ashamed of. And if we offer it to them, it will move those people to do things that any other gospel faith we have will do. Survey your field. I find people saying something like this, I don't know whether we ought to go to picture shows or not. You'll pardon me if I say ho-hum, I'm not particularly excited over that question, and I'll tell you why. Because I got to looking up statistics a little bit. I'm a bug for statistics. If I could pronounce the word, I'd like it better. But tell you what I'll do. I'll use the word figures. Now, I got to look at the figures. That's what they use down in Indiana where I come from. They just called it figures. All right. In the past, since 1940, the population of the United States has increased 12%, in case you're interested. In that period of time, the motion picture industry, the attendance has only increased 5 9/10%. What does that mean to you? The motion pictures are losing their popularity among the people. They are no competition to the church whatsoever if the church does its job properly. There is no problem there whatsoever. But on that same time, 81 6/10% of an increase in life insurance. And you say, what difference does that make? What's that all got to do with us? Let me tell you that if there is 81 6/10% increase in life insurance, then it indicates this one thing. That the people are not going to these social butterfly pictures anymore. But they're trying to get hold of some sense of security. They're trying to get some security in their life. And if they're trying for that, there is one of the greatest opportunities that the church has ever had. Because who has more to offer by way of security than the church itself? Just read the certificates. Just read these figures that we have, and you'll see what I'm talking about. 32%, 32.9%, I want to keep them exact. 32.9% of the people in the United States are under 19 years of age. Here is a great multitude of individuals, but what have we done for the person under 19 years of age? Nothing. We have no concerted effort whatsoever to win them to Christ. Here is a great virgin territory for us to open up and to go out and to win those young people to Christ. That's all we have to do. The territory is there. The opportunity is there. It's just that we've got to go out and do it. During this last period of time that I mentioned, 85.4% increase in magazine circulation, and yet we try to tell ourselves that people don't read anymore like they used to. They're reading. They're searching for something. They're looking for something in every way, shape, and form. And there isn't anything better to give them than the Bible and what it stands for. And if it meets their needs in a basic, practical way, it'll win them. Because the people are hungry today, whether you believe it or not. They are hungry for something. 54% of the family heads in the United States today are under the age of 45 years, and the majority under the age of 34 years. Family heads, I mean. If we want to get hold of the heads of families, that we can win them and their children to Christ, why don't we go out after that age group? That's all. The field is there. Look over your field. And when you find the field, you will find that we have the greatest field of any business in the world today, as far as opportunity. There is no business today that's thriving. We talk about the cigarette industry. We talk about the great opportunity and the great work that they're doing, but let me tell you something, the cigarette industry, there's only 40% of the people today that smoke cigarettes. They're living upon a very small margin of people. Compared to that, we have unlimited possibilities. So I'm sure that you'll understand what I mean when I say that it's no good to tell me that there's no opportunity. If we don't want to do it, that's all right. Let's say so, but let's be honest with ourselves and keep our facts straight. There is opportunity. Let's consider our competition. I think I'm going to last till 9:30, Brother Shaw. Let's consider, first of all, our competition. The competition that we have in the world. We have come to the place, folks, where we have some of the greatest competition of any period of time as far as church work is concerned. And we have come to the place where we're either going to have to meet that competition and get out and do something, or in a few years we'll be absolutely extinct. Whatever it is, we're not going to have it. The churches of the United States today are organizing their work. They're getting out and they're doing a job of selling their faith to the people. Now, I've told you that we have one of the greatest faiths of the world. We have something to offer to the people. We needn't be ashamed of it, but we're going to have to get out and sell it to the people. And that requires good, sound, organized business methods to accomplish our purpose. We talk about the competition that we have. Now, we have got competition. Don't you ever think we haven't. Out here are these people, individuals who don't profess any faith whatsoever. And they're going to be won to somebody. They're hungry for something. And they're going to be won by somebody. And who's going to get them? Well, I looked over a little bit of our competition. I wanted to know exactly what we were up against. And here are just a few things I found. I noticed that the Methodists last year had out 1,527 missionaries actually going out in the sole purpose of winning people to Christ. They had a budget of $9,107,108,000. I don't care whether you believe in the Methodists or not. I don't care whether you say they're doctrinal or they're not doctrinal. Believe me, they're selling people on their faith. And they're going to take the people that could be in the Church of God unless we get out and sell, do as good a job of selling. Then there's those Northern Presbyterians. Those fellows have got out 1,176 missionaries scouting around, trying to win people to Christ. They put out over $6.5 million dollars last year for missions alone. The Seventh-day Adventists had out 1,107 missionaries last year with a total budget of $13 million for missions. Then we come along and we say, well, of course, but they're big groups. They're Methodists. I told you I know all these arguments. I've heard them ever since I've been with the Church of God. Someone comes along and they say, well, those are large groups. But let's think this one over. All we would have to do is to do as well as they do per member to be a phenomenal success. Let me give you one example. I may give you two or three examples. But the Seventh-day Advents had one missionary for each 227 people. One missionary for 227 people. Now, if we did as well, I'm going to have to revise my figures because Brother Alva here was more optimistic of our membership than we were. But on my very conservative estimate of membership, we would have 22 missionaries out in the field. Instead of an annual budget in evangelism and missions of $13,000 or $14,000, we'd have an annual budget in that one department alone of $275,000 if we done just as well. That's all. It's just because we haven't got something in here that we need to make us grow. That's all. Just compare, if you will, the evangelical pre-church. I've been criticized for comparing with other churches. And I found that usually the criticism is because it gets embarrassing. The evangelical free church is a little group of people. They have 23,000 members. They've done a little better than we have. But they have 95 workers on foreign soil alone. 95. They had a budget last year for missions alone of $1,300,000. If we did as well, we'd have, for our Department of Evangelism and Missions, instead of $14,000, we'd have $260,000 to spend for evangelism and missions. Think what the general manager could do with that. I could go to Florida every winter. $260,000. That would be our budget. I don't care, folks, whether you agree or whether you disagree. I'm telling you that you can't look upon the competition that we have today and not realize that either we are going to have to get out and go to work or be consumed, because we are face to face with that type of competition. There's a lot of you that don't like the Catholics. But I'll defy any one of you to sit and listen to Bishop Sheen on television and say that he doesn't have something. Something that has an appeal to the people. And he's going to win people. There's no doubt about it. You read this story that I talked about of Chuck Templeton. Read. He went down into one town that had a population of 110,000 people, and 91,000 of those people came to hear him talk. 91,000 out of the 110 out to hear one man talk. Don't tell me that there's no opportunity in religion today. The opportunity is there. I went down Kansas City a week or two ago, and I went in to see Dr. Wilson. Perhaps some of you may know him, some of you may not, but he's one of the prominent men in the religious world today. Dr. Wilson is a man that goes out and teaches and preaches at all the large gatherings around the country. He's going to be over to Winona Lake about an hour or a little later, teaching a series of classes over there. But I want to tell you something about Dr. Wilson. I went in to see the man, and we stopped out in a little yard, and I looked over his church, and I thought, is that his church? It was just a plain old tabernacle-type building. It was made out of cement blocks. It didn't have a thing at all to recommend it. He didn't spend any more on it or as much as we spend on a lot of our churches. I suppose it was very adequate to their needs. They had a little house right next door that they had either bought or rented. He had an office in there. That's where they did all their business. Nothing at all pretentious whatsoever. He wasn't selling them on religion on the basis of what a credit there is to you to come to my church. But I went in and I found out this. That this one little church, they're not connected with any group, but this one little church supports a Bible college of 100 persons. And every person in that college primarily has been converted in that one church. And the one church has 32 missionaries out in the field today, and they support every one of them, and every one of them walked down the aisle in that church and was converted there. And they came into their college, they were trained for service, and they were sent out for service. One church. Someone will say, yes, but they must have thousands of members. I think they've got about 500. But every man in the church is a working individual. And Brother Wilson, if I can call him that, is an individual who goes out and converts people on the street. Wherever he goes. I should tell you about a joke that Brother Krogh has on me, but I won't do it. The man is a marvel. You can't meet him without being impressed with him. He always has a verse to leave with you. The verse that he left to me says when I went out the door, he says, read Leviticus 3:16. He said, it was written just for you. You know, I wouldn't have missed reading that. It was the last thing I ever done. There must be a little English on my father's side somewhere, because it took me about an hour and a half to figure out what it was. But finally, Brother Krogh come along and explained it to me. Now, I'm not going to tell you what it is. You have to read it. But I finally found out what he was talking about. That is the type of competition that we have in the world today, and we're going to have to get out and meet it. I don't care whether it isn't going to do any good for us to go along and tell ourselves, but they haven't got the truth. I don't care whether they've got the truth or not. The point is that they are selling the people on what they have got. And if you're going to meet that type of competition, you're going to have to meet it, or you're going to be consumed in the process. Well, we're going to have to improve our product a little from time to time. You say there's no opportunity for religious. I don't know, maybe you don't. But I've been told that so much that I almost got to believing it one time myself. I think it was a sorry day when I did. There's no use to say that there is no opportunity, because people today are hungry for something. I'm going to just ask you one question. I had a long list I was going to ask you. But I want to just ask you one question, and that question is this. Did you ever make the statement that the good old days of churches were gone, back in the day when everybody went to church and so on? Let me ask you, why was it that those people went to church? And I almost say, almost invariably, they'll say, well, the church was their whole life. That was their social life. And they went because that's all that they had to do. I'm willing to admit that that is true. If you'll admit also one thing with me, and that is that out in the world today there are multitudes of individuals who are lonely. There are more lonely people in the world today than there ever was in grandfather's day. People who are hungry for the companionship and true friendship. So the opportunity of the church today is greater than it ever was back in the days when grandfather was trying to convert a few. I don't believe that the opportunity is over. It's out there if we have the right thing to offer to these particular people. But we've got to develop our product. There's no use for us to advertise time and time and again and to say that we've got something to sell if we're not going to sell it. One of the things that's most needful today, I repeat, is companionship. People likes to know that they have a friend. They've got a feeling today that nobody's their friend. Did you ever get the feeling that nobody's your friend? I have. I get it every once in a while. I know just how Daniel felt down in the lion's den. You can get the feeling that there's not a friend left in the world. And that's why the companionship of the church today can be one of the most vital factors in the world. But if it's going to be a vital factor, we've got to make it that. The Bible tells us, by this shall men know that you have passed from death unto life. What? If you love the brethren. There's no use to go out and say that we're going to offer the world the companionship of the church if there is no companionship in it. We must develop the love and the compassion for one another. You can't sit out here in this audience tonight and detest the very ground I walk on and have a place in the kingdom of God. I don't care who you are. Because he says, by this shall ye know that you have passed from death unto life. Neither can I stand behind this pulpit and have malice in my heart for any one of you and have a place in the kingdom of God. All of the doctrine in the world, all of your faith in the kingdom of God, all of the baptism that you want to talk about will not get you into the kingdom of God if you do not have love for one another. And if we have that love for one another, we've got something to sell to the world that the world has never found anywhere else. We've got a product just as good as a Plymouth with shock absorbers on it. We've got something to sell. And all we need to do is to get out and sell it. You can't sell something that you haven't got. That's one trouble. Today, the world is looking for an opportunity to have surcease from the tensions of our time. If you want to be a success today, I don't care whether it's among men or beasts, there's only one thing that you have to do, and that is to make people feel perfectly free and at ease in your company. And if you are the type of person that brings peace of heart and mind to the individual, they are going to search out your company because that's what they're looking for. But you'll never get them to come to you by developing tensions within the church. Things that when people come into your company and into your presence, they're on edge and they're tense and they feel worse than they did when they were sitting at home. That's what's wrong with the world today. We don't like to be under tenseness all the time. We don't like to feel that we just simply can't relax and be at ease. Now, you just test that for a little while. You know good and well that there are a lot of people that it just gives you a relaxation to be around them. I thank God for those people. Once in a while, if I didn't meet people like that under the pressure of today's life, I don't know what I'd do. There are people that I like to just sit down and talk with. I like to sit more than anything, but they're just people that I like to sit down and talk with because you get a peace of mind. And if a person can do that to you, you're going to search for his company more and more, aren't you? That's all the church has to do. You'll have multitudes in your doors if that's what you offer to the world today. But they don't want your bickering. They don't want your discussions. They don't want your arguments. They've got that in the work. They've got that in down the street. They got it at home, 99% of them. They've got it here and they've got it there. They don't want that. They want peace of heart and mind. Perfect your product. You've got something to sell. There's no doubt about it. Then let's get out and advertise it. We've got something to sell. What are we going to do? Put it under a bushel and forget all about it? Certainly not. The only trouble is that we've taken the wrong approach in advertising. We get out here and we try to advertise something in a way that the world, the business world, would laugh up their sleeves. I think I know a little something of what I'm talking about. Advertising has been my hobby for a number of years. As I get older, it's going to get to be a bigger hobby, especially the church advertising field, because I think it's a virgin territory. But here's what's happened. We want to get a clincher of a sign to get somebody to come to church. And so we go down here along the road and we put up a sign, "Come to church next Sunday." Here's the old boy that stops in the tavern every day or two, and he goes by and looks at it and says, "You try and make me." You wouldn't get out and sell an automobile the same way. Would you go out and try to tell a man and say to him, buy a Ford? Why, he'll go out and buy anything else but. That's human nature. So what do they happen? If Ford wants you to buy a Ford, here's what he does. He doesn't sell you the product at all. He sells you the benefit of the product. He gets out and he puts a nice big picture in the magazine, and he shows a young man up on the crest of a hill, the moon coming up over the mountain, and the young lady by his side, and he don't tell you, he don't guarantee anything, but he implies that all you got to do is to buy the Ford and you're in. That's exactly what we have to do in church work if we're going to have sound advertising methods. We've missed the boat entirely. We haven't even used the knowledge that the world has. We ought to sell the benefits of our commodities. We ought to establish a definite purpose for our advertising, something that we hope to accomplish and attain. We ought to use all of our modern our knowledge, and we ought to work for the percentage that's obtainable. Here's what's the matter with most of us. We think we're going to put on an advertising campaign. We're going to put a $3 ad in the local paper. We're going to have 100 people out next Sunday. The advertising world today knows that that doesn't work. I have prepared mail order campaigns for work other than our own, just for the experience and the practice that it gave me. And let me tell you, if you get a 2 or a 3% response, you've done good. The advertising world works on the percentage of 2 or 3%, that's all. But if you develop a program that will bring 3 people out of every 100 into your church, then get out and send it to 15,000 people, and you'll start getting them in. Work for the percentage. Don't expect the impossible. Everybody knows that. And once you have developed that program, you'll get results. Test your results. Test and check and try till you know that you can succeed. I wouldn't feel like talking about some of these things tonight if it weren't for the Community Crusade campaign that we had last year. I had a lot of people tell me it won't work. But let me tell you, it did work. Nobody today can say that it didn't work. It worked because there was a unity of effort. Because we all got together and said we're going to do something. And we got out and done it. And one of the surprising things about that whole thing was the fact that time and time again, those callers went into the houses 2 blocks from the church, and the people said, "Well, what do you know? I never knew you folks were down there." No use to say we don't put our light under a bushel when the people next door to our churches don't even know what we believe. And those who will tell you that they won't receive it, they won't listen to you, what do you think happened in that campaign? Time after time, people said, "I am certainly glad that you stopped to see me." The people invariably appreciated the interest that was shown. And out of that group, over 1,700 families, over, figure 3.5 people to a family if you want to figure it out, and that's how many thousand people were retained by our calling committees as good prospects. And I have a feeling that our calling committees weren't optimistic in the matter, because too many people think, well, this one's no good and that one's no good. So I believe that what they retained could be regarded as good prospects. But all I'm saying is there is about 4,000 people living right next door to our churches today that's just waiting for you, by your own admission, waiting for you to go out and say, "Brother, come into church." That's all. No opportunity. All we've got to do is to use our heads and get to work. And if we don't, then we're going to go downhill. Now, the results of any campaign can be predicted. We can develop a system of doing our work. And I was very happy when somebody said, Brother Wiggins said today, that we ought to have an organized approach. I can say amen to that, if there's nothing wrong with saying amen. I can say amen to that organized approach idea. Because we can develop a program of winning people to Christ that we can predict in advance how many people out of a certain number we're going to get in a given locality. Business World does it the other day. I was talking to a man in the oil business. And I said, "What in the world are you putting a station up at a certain place for?" "We said it'll pay off." I said, "How do you know it'll pay off?" He said, "We put a counter across the road." He says, "There's so many cars go by there." He said, "There's so many cars out of so many that turns in. We know exactly how many will come in." And he says, "We know how much the average each one of them will take in gasoline. We know what the profit is, and we know how much we're going to make." He says, "You can tell. The world has it figured out. We can do exactly the same thing today. We can develop a system whereby we know that out of 1,000 people in a given locality, that there's going to be a certain number of people who can be won to Christ. The only thing is, we think they're not. We don't believe they're there. We're not willing to consider the possibility." So I'm going to let you go home pretty soon. But I want to say this. The last and final thing on the list. The business world reaps the harvest. I met one firm that didn't. And not so long ago, I got interested in a little gadget I wanted to buy. Really wanted to buy it. I was weakened by the advertisement in the paper. And I sat down and I wrote them a letter and I said I'd like to buy one of them. And they sent me a beautiful picture of it. And when I saw it, I thought, my, there, I sure want it. And do you know, they've never told me to this day how to get it. Nobody's ever come to see me. They never even told me what the price of it was, and I wouldn't know how to get it if I want to. And I sit there every day frustrated, because there it is, almost within reach. And I got to complaining to myself one day, just sitting there looking at that thing, about these business firms that go out and advertise and don't take care of their business. And then I got to thinking about us. And I didn't talk about them anymore. One of the troubles that we have is the fact that we go out and advertise our wares, if we do, but we never do a thing about reaping the harvest. That's what we need. I heard someone say today that newspaper advertising wasn't very productive because it didn't get people out to church, it didn't accomplish this, or it didn't accomplish that. Of course it isn't. Advertising consists of a well-rounded program. And that means that you've got to reap the harvest after you have created the interest. We are not dedicated to the proposition of converting people. Some of those people over there that don't have the truth that we have, we say, they have a phrase they use. They ought never to use it. They walk up to a man and say, "Brother, are you saved?" We wouldn't use it. If we don't use it, we'd ought to find something to take its place. I don't say maybe that you ought to use the term, "Are you saved?" But we've spent all of our life arguing over whether you ought to use it or not without trying to get something to take its place. What have we done to convert people? Did you ever walk up to a man on the street and say to him, "Brother, are you a Christian?" There certainly isn't anything wrong with that in anybody's book. Did you ever tell him what there was to Christianity? That you've got something to sell? We don't even ask people to walk down the aisle at our churches. We don't provide for the element of conversion. All of the advertising in the world isn't going to do us any good unless we reach out to reap the harvest. We're going to have to win people to Christ. Let's ask them to come to church. Let's ask them to make a decision for Christ. Brother Kroger, I think, was telling me something about Dr. Wilson. I don't know whether I've got the whole story or not. Maybe I better let him tell it. But anyway, he was talking about Dr. Wilson walking down the street and he met a lady with a little doll. And she was petting it and going over it, and he said, "You kind of like that dog, don't you?" "Stranger, perfect stranger." She said, "Yes." "Yes, I do." He said, "That's too bad." He said, "Why?" He said, "Don't you know that the Bible said that everybody that are without are dogs and so and so, so and so?" And then he went on to point out that she wasn't better off than the dog was. And that woman was converted. We're afraid of that term, converted. But what we need today is some good old-fashioned conversion. We needn't be afraid of it. Let's ask people if they've decided something for Christ. Let's get out and reap the harvest. It's out there. Let's don't be afraid to talk to them. We don't have to be obnoxious. You don't have to get out and make people mad at you and everything else. But let's remember this. But we've got something to sell. We don't have to make any apologies for it. We've got something that the world needs. Secondly, we know the way to sell it. We have all the knowledge that we need to develop a good program and to get out and to sell it. If our collective heads are not equal to that job, then we'll have to get another one. We can get out and sell it. We can predict the results. No use to say that we can't make it. The law of averages is with us. If we'll try to win so many people to Christ, we'll get so many people to Christ. The world is hungry today. Why shall we put our light under a bushel? It is not scriptural. It is not the promise that God gave us. Let's get out. And if you don't want to say, "Are you saved?" let's get out and say to the people, "Brother, have you accepted Christ? Do you have an opportunity in the kingdom of God? We've got something for you. The time's short. Let's give you a chance." Let's ask them. You'll be surprised how many people will come with tears in their eyes and thank you for the opportunity. I'm not a pessimist. I don't believe for one moment that the opportunity of the church is gone. I believe that there is a glorious future before us, a future that has every hope and promise if we'll get out and do the things that the Bible tells us to do. Not quibble among ourselves or waste time with inconsequential things. Not spend our time bickering them with one another. But let's get out just to the friend friend down the street in that good compassion, I mean the love of God, and say to him, "Brother, have you ever accepted Christ? Would you be ready if Christ come today?" When we've done that, we don't need to worry about the future. There's the greatest future before us that we'll ever know. Young people here, there's men and women. Have you accepted Christ? I'm going to ask Brother Randall to step right up here. Now, while we sing the next verse, if there's anybody, won't you come?